Thank you again for being here. What a beautiful, beautiful crowd this morning. I want to talk to us about mothers this morning, Mother's Day. Again, hopefully I'll get my mom up here sooner rather than later. My mom is 83 years young now, and the older I get, the more sentimental I get, the more emotional I get. I know that's hard to believe, but it just keeps getting worse and worse as the years roll on. Mother's Day and Father's Day are tough. They are the most beautiful of days, but they can be very tough days for some of us. I've shared with you before that Father's Day was never a good time for me. Didn't have a good godly father, didn't have a good stepfather. So that's always been just a very tough day for me. When I pray to my Father in heaven, that's a very special thing for me because he's really the only father that I've ever truly had. I've been blessed with a few other men in my life, but none really take the place of a good godly father. But Mother's Day is different. Mother's Day is a special day because I had a good godly mother, a wonderful mother, and I want to talk about mothers this morning, unashamedly so. But I do want us to think about, just for a second before we begin, there will be a lot of moms, a lot of mothers who will not hear a sermon about mothers, because they're not here. They're not in our church. They're not in any church this morning. And I think it's so easy for us. I've noticed this in my own life. It's so easy to look down upon people because they find themselves in a bad situation. If I've not been in that situation, if I've not encountered those same things, it is so easy to sit sort of in a lofty chair and to look down upon other people and say, well, you know, they're kind of getting what they deserve. They've made mistakes and they're just going to have to live with them. But when sometimes that something, that trouble visits you or visits your family or someone close to you, things seem to change, don't they? All of a sudden, you become a little more sympathetic to the situation. I just want us to realize, we've been talking a lot about fostering and bringing children into our homes. We have folks in this church that are doing that, others that are praying about doing that. But where do these foster kids come from? They come from broken homes and a lot of times single mothers, single parent homes. And so I want us to be thinking about single moms this morning. It's so easy to say, you know, you made mistakes, you're going to have to live with that. But haven't we all made mistakes? Don't we all need a little grace? Don't we all need some love, some forgiveness? One of the things that was so beautiful about the church that Paul and I attended in Oklahoma City, they seemed to be such a church of grace, and they weren't always that way, but because of my dear friend Bill Day, who was a preacher there, over the course of about 30 years of preaching and teaching, they really became a church of love and forgiveness and grace. And after we had been there for a while, I realized why that was true. It's because so many of those families had experienced a child that got pregnant, not married, a son who was addicted to drugs, a son who was in jail, and on and on and on and on. And so when people came our way, there seemed to be so much empathy, so much love, and a willingness to accept them with open arms because they themselves had experienced some hard things. They had experienced the love and grace of the people around them, and it was so easy for them to then extend that love and that grace. It's just difficult when we've never experienced something hard, when we've always come from a good family, a church-going family, to realize that not everybody grew up that way. Not everybody had the beginning that you had. So I just want us to think about that, to be praying about what we might be able to do in our community and how we might reach out to everyone, but maybe especially those single moms. When Robert Ingersoll, he was a notorious skeptic, when he was in his heyday, two college students went to hear him lecture. And then afterwards, they were walking back home down the street, and one of those college students said, "Wow, I think he really kicked the props out from under Christianity, didn't he?" To which the other one replied, "No, I don't think he did. He did not explain my mother's life. And until he explains my mother's life, I will continue to serve my mother's God." There's an ancient Jewish proverb that says, God could not be everywhere, and therefore he made mothers. Man's first home was in the Garden of Eden, and his last home, hopefully, will be in heaven. This shows what God would have the home to be. God himself built the first and the last, but man has built all the others. Man has made a lot of mistakes on his part in building a home, but whether he built his home in a cave or a cabin or a cottage, whether the home was built of logs or brick or stone, it's the best thing that he's ever done. The best thing in spite of his failures, and probably the most important thing. I think God never loved us more than when he planned the home. God's heart must have throbbed with sympathy and goodwill, and his love for the sons and daughters of men must have been on fire when he thought out this home relationship, when he conceived this place of rest, this place of shelter, a place of happiness, and a place of love. And I think it's also good to note that God so fixed the home that it doesn't depend on the size of home or how expensive the furnishings are. That's not what makes a home. Only a few people can have those things. But even the most humble among us can have a home. The mother is the soul of the home. I know that that is the language of sentiment, but I think it is nobly true. The foundations of the home may be wood, brick, stone. The floor may be of inlaid hardwood, pine, slab, or it may be a dirt floor. The roof may be shingles or slate or bamboo. Whatever these materials, the home just is not alive without mom. Without mother, the home has no breath of life. She is its heartbeat. She is its atmosphere. Her heart pumps in its life current. She is its pulse. She is its life. She is its light. Without her, the home is empty. Without mom, home is not home. There was a cartoon years ago in the Saturday Evening Post. Does anybody even remember the Saturday Evening Post? You know what I'm talking about when I say that? Google it if you don't know what it is. Don't Google now. Later. A cartoon in the Saturday Evening Post years ago showed a young boy. He was about maybe 5 or 6 years old. He was on the telephone. He was talking, and he said this. Mom is in the hospital. The twins and Roxy and Billy and Sally and the dog and me and Dad are all home alone. That's about right, isn't it? We're all home alone. Paula and I were talking about this this past week about moms. She said when she was little, her dad went back to school to get his master's degree. And she said that was, you know, that was tough on him, but it didn't really affect the family that much. But when her mom went back to get a degree, she said everything changed. Everything changed. When mom was there, they had to go and sit in the parking lot and wait for mom. Sometimes their dad would come and pick them up, sometimes not. But supper was late. Everybody else had to pitch in. When mom was busy, it changed the world for all of them. God needed help to show his love, and so he gave us mothers. What an hour it must have been in the councils of heaven when God thought of mother, when the thought of mother was first conceived in the heart and the mind of God. When the plan was made for her to nourish the seed of life in her flesh, to warm it into life by the warmth of her very own blood, to make her soul its shelter and her heart its cradle, to turn her touch into a caress, her smile into sunshine, and her voice into a lullaby. The mother, I think, is the final proof of God. Motherhood is a beautiful thing. The baby is in her arms. He lies on her breast. His chubby fingers play in her hair. His cheek is against her cheek. His arms around her neck, his breath on her skin. Long before he can even talk, his eyes speak of his love for his mother. You know, there are many beautiful things in the world, but there is nothing this side of heaven quite as beautiful as a mother with her baby in her arms. Motherhood is a wonderful thing. Motherhood through the years has taken a bad rap. I mean, when I was a kid, it was all about Equal Rights Amendment. It was all about women's lib. It was about women going out into the world. You need to have a career. You need to go out and be fulfilled. It's not fulfilling to just be a mother. But I wonder, is there no limit to a mother's sacrifices? Will her arms never tire? Will her fingers never grow weary? It was about 6 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. James Lawson of Running Springs, California, that's near the San Bernardino Mountains, if that means anything to you. He left home to apply for a job. It was about an hour later that his wife, 36-year-old Patsy, left the house for her fifth grade teaching job, and it was down the mountain in Riverside, California. She had her two children with her, 5-year-old Susan and 2-year-old Gerard. They were going to be dropped off at the babysitter's, but unfortunately, they never got that far. 8.5 hours later, James Lawson found his wife and his daughter dead in their wrecked car. It was upside down in a mountain stream. His 2-year-old son was just barely alive in the 48-degree water. When he got there and he saw the car overturned, he thought he heard the cries of his wife, but he scrambled down and he found his wife literally locked in death, holding up their 2-year-old above the water's edge. His wife almost frozen there in death, holding up their 2-year-old son who is still barely alive. That's the essence of a mother's love. Love is the only possible explanation of motherhood. So what is it that I'm trying to do this morning? I'm just trying to keep you from forgetting all that your mother has done for you. I'm thinking that she might be hungry to feel your arms around her neck, and that if you are away from her, you might send her a message, give her a call. Some of you will have to send your message by the way of the throne of God. Nobody knows the work it takes to keep the home together. Nobody knows of the steps it takes. Nobody knows but mother. Nobody listens to childish woe, which kisses only smother. Nobody is pained by naughty blows. Nobody, only mother. Nobody knows of the sleepless care bestowed on baby brother. Nobody knows of the tender prayer. Nobody, only mother. Nobody knows of the lessons taught of loving one another. Nobody knows of the patience sought. Nobody, only mother. Nobody knows of the anxious fears, lest darlings may not weather the storms of life in after years. Nobody knows but mother. Nobody kneels at the throne above to thank the Heavenly Father for the sweetest gift, a mother's love. Nobody can but mother. You should not expect the impossible of your mother. She's only human. A 15-year-old boy, he came running into the house and he found his mom in bed. He asked if she were sick or something. He was truly concerned about her. And the mom replied that, as a matter of fact, she didn't really feel all that well. And the son replied, "Don't worry, Mom, don't worry a bit about dinner. I'll be happy to carry you down to the stove." It's all right to have a high ideal of motherhood, but we must be slow to condemn if she's not always able to measure up to it. Her load will never be light, but she will cry to God for the strength to carry it. She will be strained, she will be tested, she will be tried, she will be frazzled. But she will try to remember that in the home, too much noise is better than too great a silence. She will know that it's better to have muddy shoes on the carpet than to have them cleaned and laid away. She will know that it's better to have fingerprints on the window panes and the mirrors than to have those same fingers waving goodbye as they go home. I can still remember going to see my grandmother in Northeast Arkansas, a little town called Caraway. Maybe in its heyday, it was about 1,000 people strong, maybe. Flat as it can be, it's cotton farming land over there. It used to be all cotton, now it's some rice. But we would go and visit my grandmother. I didn't realize this when I was a kid, but they lived in a section. They didn't always, but in their older years, they moved into this little duplex. But it was a series of duplexes, which was actually government-subsidized housing. I didn't realize that when I was a kid. I just knew that's where my grandma and grandpa lived. They had one bedroom, a little living room, a tiny kitchen, a little eating area, and one bedroom, and a bathroom. That was it. And so five of us would leave Nashville and go and stay at my grandmother's house, and we would pile, I don't even know where we all slept, on the floor, on the couch, made pallets, but early the next morning, you could smell bacon and eggs. My grandmother was up early cooking. And, you know, we drag in about midnight, and about 5:30, 6 in the morning, my grandmother's up cooking breakfast, and we're just like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. But I'll never forget, we would spend just a few short days there visiting. I knew this was going to happen yesterday and the day before. My grandmother would stand in the doorway, and we'd be all piled into the back of a Ford Galaxy 500, jockeying for position, trying to see who would get, you know, the seat, which was always went to my older sister, and I would be in the floorboard on the hump. But before we all got our positions, we would back out, and my grandmother would be standing at the door. How can we ever repay our mothers? So let me close with this. I didn't think I would cry until I got to this point. Remind me not to leave my notes. I always get in trouble when I leave my notes. John Todd. You don't know that name, but he was born in Rutledge, Vermont, into a family of several children. They later moved to the village of Killingsworth. This is way back in the early 1800s. There, at a very young age, both of John's parents died. The relatives wondered whether what they would do with so many children, how they would parcel them out to different friends, different relatives. One dear and loving aunt said that she would take little John into her home. She would raise him. The aunt sent a horse and a servant to get John. He was only about 6 years old at the time. The servant, whose name was Caesar, he came and he put the little boy on the back of a horse. And on the way back, they had this enduring conversation. Little John said, "Will she be there?" "Oh, yes, she'll be there waiting up for you." "Will I like living with her?" "My son, you fall into good hands," he said. "Will she love me?" "Ah, she has a big, big heart." "Will I have my own room? Will she let me have a puppy?" "Son, she's got everything all set. I think she may even have some surprises, too." "Do you think she'll go to bed before we get there?" "Oh, no. Oh, no. She'll be sure to wait up for you. You'll see when we get out of these woods. You'll see her candle shining in the window." And so when they got to the clearing, sure enough, there was a candle in the window, and she was standing in the doorway. She reached down, she kissed him, and she said, "Welcome home." She fed him supper. She took him to his room, and she waited with him until he fell asleep. John Todd grew up to be a preacher, but it was there at his aunt's, his new mother, that he grew up. It was always a place of enchantment because of his aunt. It awed him that she had given him a second home, that she had become a second mother to him. Years later, long after he had moved away, his aunt wrote him a letter telling him about her impending death. Her health was failing, and she wondered what was to become of her. And this is what John Todd wrote to her. "My dear aunt, years ago I left a house of death, not knowing where I was to go, whether anyone cared, whether it was the end of me. The ride was long, but the slave encouraged me. Finally, he pointed out your candle to me, and there we were in the yard, and you embraced me and took me by the hand into my own room that you had made up. After all these years, I still can't believe it. How you did all that for me. I was expected. I felt safe in that room, so welcomed. It was my room. And now it's your turn to go. And as one who has tried it out, I'm writing to let you know that someone is waiting up. Your room is all ready. The light is on. The door is open. And as you ride into the yard, don't worry, Auntie. You are expected. I know, because I once saw God. I once saw God standing in your doorway. Somebody else is going to have to preach on Mother's Day next year. I don't know if I can do it again. I have been blessed with a wonderful, godly mother. Thank you, not just to mothers, but to all godly women who have loved a child, who have helped, encouraged, cared for, prayed over a child, because you mean the world to us. Churches all over the country would have shut down years ago, Brent, had it not been for godly women. Am I right? Thank you. Thank you, God, for godly women.